This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, our periodic update on U.S. politics and campaign 2016. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In a stunning move last week, on the heels of Pope Francis's historic visit to the United States, John Boehner, Republican from the state of Ohio and Speaker of the House of Representatives, announced his resignation. He said he had planned to leave the speakership by the end of the year, but that he moved up his timetable due to unrest among hardline conservatives in the party. His decision takes effect at the end of October. More radical members have challenged Boehner on everything from federal spending to anti-abortion fights. Regarding the Republican presidential candidates, Donald Trump still heads the pack, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker announced he was dropping out. Notwithstanding his controversial statement about whether or not a U.S. president could be of the Muslim faith, Republican candidate Ben Carson is currently just behind Donald Trump in the polls. And is Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, making a slow comeback? And what about the fortunes of former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina, who earned high marks for her performance in the most recent televised Republican debate? The leading Democratic contender, Hillary Clinton, is still on the defensive over the use of a personal email server while she was Secretary of State, and her challenger to the left, Bernie Sanders, has not lost steam. What's going on? What is behind Speaker of the House of Representatives John Boehner's early resignation and its timing? We'll ask our political analysts. John Fortier is director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a think tank based here in Washington. And Igor Volsky, he's contributing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress, a think tank based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Fortier, let's talk about Speaker John Boehner's resignation earlier than we had anticipated. Talk about why you think he made this announcement, and do you think it has anything to do with Pope Francis's words to the Congress?
Well, it was a surprise, I think, to most in Washington, but the factors underlying it are not new. They've been there, really, for the last several years of his speakership. The Republican caucus is fractious, to say the least. It has a part of it which is 50 or so members who are much more combative, more conservative a bit, but really it's a very conservative caucus generally, but more tactically willing to challenge the president, not wanting the Speaker of the House to compromise. And we've seen this again and again when we get to the end of the year or a time where we need to pass our appropriations bills. There's a time of a real decision that this group is often reluctant to deal with the president or want to go along with the deal that the leaders of the Republican Party have cut. So we were facing this again. We were looking at a deal that was going to have to be cut to keep the government going. The Speaker, I think, rightly recognized that he was going to be in the crosshairs of another fight like this and has said he did not want to be a distraction, wanted to get out of the way. I think essentially what that means is that they're going to try to smooth the way to keep the government open for just a little while. Down the road, we'll have another fight, but that the Speaker will serve his time, get this deal done, and move on and be replaced by another who will likely face some of the same challenges with the caucus, which is, again, hard to corral as a majority.
Turning to you, Igor Volsky, no one would accuse John Boehner of being a bleeding heart liberal, but he does seem less conservative, at least compared to this caucus that seems to have precipitated his early resignation.
Well, he's certainly more realistic, and I think it's in some ways tragic that the Speaker had to resign because he wanted to govern. And so now, of course, we'll see the rise of whether it be the current majority leader or whoever else who's going to follow in his footsteps. And I think is going to have, as John correctly pointed out, a very hard time governing, a very hard time agreeing to any kind of deal, negotiating anything at all, even keeping the government opened, once we have this fight again in mid-December. And so ultimately, though, this is a big problem for the Republican Party. They're in a presidential year. All of the candidates are going to get pulled into all of the craziness that's happening in Congress. They're going to have to comment on it, and it's really going to hurt them, I think. think, when they get to the general election, because Congress has a very low approval rating. If you have a further push to put a roadblock into any kind of bill moving forward or anything at all, even the government functioning, you know, the Republican candidate's going to have to pick a side, is going to have to comment on, is going to have to, in some ways, agree with these actions. And ultimately, it's going to be a big party problem for them, I think.
Back to you, John Fortier. Talk about this problem within the Republican Party, and what can Kevin McCarthy, he's the current majority leader, will he be taking over after Mr. Boehner leaves the post?
Well, we'll see. We'll actually have an election, and he is the likely candidate to succeed him. The more conservative faction is not completely happy with him. Kevin McCarthy is a conservative and is broadly liked in the caucus, but there is likely to be a challenge to him as well from somebody to the right. But if he is the speaker, or even if someone else is the speaker, they are going to face the same sort of tensions. There are not enough people to get 218 in the caucus, the 218 meaning a majority of the House of Representatives, easily. There's a large enough group of people who are more populist who are likely to oppose many deals that are going to make life difficult. So at the end of the day, we have gotten through all these crises. It's just been very messy, and it will not be a fun job for the next Speaker of the Republican Party, who will have to deal with the same forces that Boehner did.
Igor Volsky, the fact that whether it's Kevin McCarthy or whomever will have to deal with the same forces. What are the implications for the next leader, and how will this person reconcile these factions, particularly the so-called 50 or so who simply do not want to compromise?
Well, certainly, as we reach the end of this president's term, he's not going to be putting forward any great new initiatives for Congress to pass. So in some respects, that weight is lifted off McCarthy's shoulders. He really has to increase the nation's debt ceiling, fund the government, and can Congress accomplish those basic things? I mean, that's a very basic responsibility of the job. If those 50 can't get along and do that, then what are they doing there?
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOANews.com.
Visit VOANews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
Welcome back to Encounter. We're talking about the U.S. political scene with our analysts, John Fortier and Igor Volsky. Well, back to you, John Fortier. To talk about what there is left to do, in fact, this year, talk about things that have to be accomplished that this House of Representatives and the Senate have to come to a decision about.
I think you were right that the decision points on yet another time to keep the government open or to fund the government more permanently or more through a year rather than just through a temporary measure that we're going to see now. And the raising of the debt ceiling, which we will hit. Those have been the two most contentious things over the years because they are forcing actions. And in some ways, the part of the caucus on the Republican side that wants to get some change in their direction sees those as opportunities to raise their issues, and whether it's defunding Planned Parenthood or major cuts in the growth of spending. So I think those are the big things. I don't think this is going to be the most productive Congress, and I agree with Igor that the president is not primarily legislating. He's doing things more through his ability as president to do things by executive order and executive action. But you have seen some things that have gone through the Congress, and you might even see some surprising bipartisan things. I know that there's some talk of some unlikely allies, someone like Senator Schumer, a Democrat who might be the next leader of the Senate for Democrats, and Paul Ryan, a very strong conservative leader in the House, talking about tax reform. I don't expect a lot out of this, but we shouldn't expect too much out of divided government. I think the key is, do we have these showdowns? Yes, we probably will. We will probably get through them. And by the time we get to the next summer, we're on top of the election and we're not expecting to see much more in Congress. So it's a short period of time with, you know, maybe time for one accomplishment and time to avert a couple crises, and then we're into the election.
Turning back to you, Igor Volsky, for anything to add or subtract to what needs to be done this year, whether it's raising the debt ceiling, funding the government, if only temporarily. There's also this so-called Planned Parenthood controversy. You might want to just touch on that very briefly for our listeners to explain what that is and why that has been an impediment for the more conservative members.
Well, this is the question of reality. There's all these videos of Planned Parenthood that allege that Planned Parenthood sells parts of fetuses for profit. Planned Parenthood denies this. There's been no actual criminal charges. I think there's been at least three investigations that found this not to be the case, but nonetheless, more conservative members of Congress want to take out any funding for Planned Parenthood in the government appropriations process, and this is why they are threatening to shut down the government. government if any Planned Parenthood funding is included in the continuing resolution. And the question of reality comes in here because Planned Parenthood funding comes through mandatory funding of the government that is funding that goes through every year that's not subject to this annual vote that they're going to be voting on. So even if they shut down the government over this question, they won't be able to stop funds to Planned Parenthood. It's the same problem they faced in 2013, where they shut down the government for 16 days to prevent the country from seeing the horrors of Obamacare, as they said, yet Obamacare continued to function because it was subject to a different funding process. And so, again, you have to be realistic. You have to work within the framework of the rules, within the framework of the Congress you have. And that, I think, is the trouble with these 50 Republicans, ultimately, who want what they want and won't budge and, frankly, aren't there to do much of anything at all.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a think tank based here in Washington. And Igor Volsky, from whom you just heard, he's contributing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress. We're talking about U.S. politics and some of the factors that led Speaker of the House John Boehner to accelerate his resignation. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout-out to a loyal listener from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, Bansiel Sharifani. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, John Fortier. We would be remiss if we didn't mention the historic visit of Pope Francis to the United States and, of course, his historic address to the U.S. Congress. Talk about whether or not you think, because he moved so many people, irregardless of their political affiliation, if you think he might have moved the needle a little bit on the part of climate skeptics, for example, since he's very much in favor of trying to reduce global warming. He believes climate change is a real factor that humans contribute to, which many people, particularly many Republicans on the conservative side, disagree with. Do you think that he moved anybody on that topic or perhaps even immigration reform?
Clearly, this pope has rejuvenated the sort of more liberal Catholic and liberal Christian elements of the United States, and they're excited to hear him out on issues like climate change and immigration, although there are some issues and abortion and other things that he did speak about, but maybe not gave as much prominence as past popes in their speeches. They do cut both ways. So I'm not sure at the end of the day it's affecting public opinion, but you know, you do see the exuberance of more liberal Catholics and a little bit of uncomfortableness of more conservative Catholics with this message, and people trying to use the argument both ways. Opinion's pretty settled on these things. The Pope reinforces it probably more than changes it, but it was, you know, significant that he had spoken in these directions.
Igor Volsky, what is your take on the Pope's visit and to what extent he may have changed any minds or people pretty much wedded to their points of view, notwithstanding the Pope's eloquence?
I generally agree with John, but I witnessed two miracles when the Pope was here. The first was Hillary Clinton came out against the Keystone Pipeline the very moment the Pope landed in D.C., which was extraordinary. And number two, John Boehner resigned. So I don't know, you know, if there was a third I missed when he was in New York and Philadelphia and he left our fine city here in D.C. But broadly speaking, I think if anything, it was certainly a very exciting time for the city, for the country to see this man who really transcends the day-to-day politics that we all follow so closely and can talk about these broad themes of what it means to be human, what it means to be a leader. And certainly, at least some people took that to heart.
All right. Unfortunately, back to pedestrian politics. And let's look at the Democrats, John Fortier. The Democrats have a big debate coming up.
So you say the Democrats are pedestrian.
Well, just politics in general. So what about the Democratic debate on October 13th? And talk about Hillary Clinton. Has she been able to put to rest to some degree the controversy over the email server? Or is that going to be dogging her for quite some time? Give us a sense of the Democratic side of the ledger.
Well, Republicans have had two debates, and they've been, depending on your perspective, raucous or informative. They certainly have been well-watched. Democrats have waited a bit. And I think Hillary Clinton is struggling a bit. I still think she is the front runner. She has a a strong challenge from Bernie Sanders. We knew that she would have a challenge from the left, someone who would emphasize her hawkishness on foreign policy or that she didn't care enough about inequality. There'd be somebody making that argument. It's Bernie Sanders. I think he's a good spokesman for that, but unlikely to prevail, not having enough strength. And so what the field is really looking for is there's some dissatisfaction with Hillary Clinton, but I think they're really looking more for an alternative, someone maybe to at least be a good, strong number two to Hillary Clinton. And that's why I think Vice President Biden, considering getting in the race, is getting some legs and that he may jump in, because no party or individual wants to see someone just walk to the nomination without a challenge. The last thing I'll say about the debate is I don't think it's likely to go that well for Hillary Clinton. She's the front runner and people know her already. And a debate is a good opportunity for a challenger to stand up in the same podium on the same level and say, hey, I'm a pretty good candidate too. So I don't think it will be fatal to her, but I would not be surprised to see her come out of the debate and people say, well, you know, she showed some weakness. Bernie Sanders is actually stronger than you think. And I'm not sure if Joe Biden will be in that debate. Probably not. But if he is, you know, maybe he shows some strength. So I think it's something of a no-win proposition for Hillary in the first debate. But I think she has the strength to prevail as we go along.
Before I turn to Igor, who else will be on the stage besides Bernie Sanders?
We will have Martin O'Malley and Jim Webb and maybe Larry Lessig. Lincoln Chafee was a former Republican from Rhode Island who then became an independent and now is a Democrat. Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland. Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia. This other candidate I mentioned is something of a protest candidate on one issue of campaign finance from Harvard Law School. Certainly a smaller field than the many, many Republicans that you've seen in the debates.
Indeed, a smaller field. Igor Volsky, perhaps half, but nonetheless, your take on the Democratic field, Hillary Clinton's fortunes and challengers, and do you think Vice President Joe Biden is yet to jump in?
I mean, the latest reporting suggests that he will. It's going to be, I think, a hard campaign for him. As we all know, he tragically lost his son and very publicly dealt with that grief and continues to deal with it. And if he feels that he's ready, his family's ready, then I guess more power to him. And certainly Hillary's still the front runner. I agree with John, but this is not the campaign she hoped to run. This isn't the conversation she hoped to have, where every interview starts with questions about her emails, her server. And, you know, she has okay answers, I guess, but it's all kind of complicated and cumbersome and why. And so, yeah, this debate that's coming up on October 13th is going to be a no-win proposition. I mean, I suppose if she can use the debate to focus back on kind of those key issues that Democrats care about, income inequality, building up the middle class, then perhaps she can kind of reorient her campaign. So I think in some ways it's also a big opportunity for her.
Before I turn back to John Fortier, a follow-up for you with respect to the Keystone Pipeline. You had said that was a miracle that she came out against it. Discuss what you mean by that.
Well, I was a bit facetious in the sense that I think that she had argued before stating this position that she was against it, that she wasn't going to weigh in until the president made his decision because she was there in the beginning of the process and she didn't want to cloud the waters or something. And I think ultimately they made the political calculation. And, you know, to be fair, a lot of her advisors, a lot of her top advisors were against Keystone Pipeline from the start. She, in the very beginning of the process, expressed support for it or said it's likely that the State Department, when she ran it, would approve it, and then kind of spent a long time not taking a position. And she ultimately made the calculation, I think, partly because of the Bernie Sanders effect that we've seen of pulling her to the left, and partly because this is such an important issue for the Democratic grassroots that she has to be against it. And frankly, it's not hard to be against a project that's kind of been in bureaucracy for years, and many analysts say may not even be profitable for Keystone anymore because it's a different kind of energy market. But she decided, you know, now she's going to kind of take a very strong stance on it. And so she said, I'm not going to wait for the president. I'm going to say no now. And I think it's for her voters, it's the right decision.
All right. Well, back to you, John Fortier, as we conclude talking about the Republicans once again, who's up, who's down. And I recall in previous programs, you thought highly of prospects for Scott Walker. And how do you feel about that right now?
Those predictions are always hard when they're about the future. Yeah. And so Scott Walker has dropped out of the race, as Carol has alluded to. And look, I think we still are in a similar situation that we were, but that maybe things are starting to coalesce a bit. I think we're going to see more people dropping out. That's one thing. We won't see all 17 that we started with as we get closer and closer to Iowa and New Hampshire. Donald Trump still leads in the polls, and another outsider, Ben Carson, is second. Donald Trump on immigration and just his general persona and some other issues. Ben Carson, a very strong social conservative. And then you start to see, is there another candidate who might be more acceptable to the establishment? Who I don't think that Trump is going away or Ben Carson is going away per se, but you might see some coalescing around somebody who is more of a traditional candidate. Obviously, the one that wanted that mantle at first was Jeb Bush, and he really has struggled and has not really risen above much where he's been in the polls, pretty low all along. He's certainly got the resources to do so, but he has not made that move. Carly Fiorina is the interesting outsider candidate, but she might be kind of acceptable to the establishment. She's a former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, but still is not your traditional candidate, but maybe not as outsider as Trump and Carson. The other one to watch, I think, is Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, who was always there as a pretty interesting candidate, but was going to have a hard time winning if Jeb Bush was doing well. They're both from Florida. In fact, Jeb Bush was his mentor in many ways. But Marco Rubio, I think, has started to attract some of the donors who have gone to Jeb Bush. And so if I were to watch in the next few months, I would watch how maybe Carly Fiorina or Marco Rubio do. Are they able to sort of get the general establishment support together, forcing many of the other candidates out of the race? That's certainly a scenario, because Donald Trump isn't going away, but he could be beaten by somebody who brings together the part of the party that is not voting for him at this point.
One name you omitted, John Kasich, the current governor of Ohio. He was a member of Congress, tremendous experience. He says that I'm the only Midwestern governor in the race who could bring values to Washington, D.C. He'd like to inherit perhaps some of the supporters of Walker. Do you think he has any chance?
Well, now that Scott Walker's gone, he is the only Midwestern governor there. That's true. Look, I think that there are a couple of other candidates who might still be in the larger group of the top eight or so. Chris Christie is actually not Midwestern, but from New Jersey, and John Kasich. Look, I still think they're still not doing that well in the polls. They're going to have to persuade voters that they're the one and not a Marco Rubio or even a Jeb Bush or a Carly Fiorina. So I think it is possible that he'd be the nominee, but still is not performing quite as well as I think some of the buzz around him hoped he would.
Well, back to you, Igor Volsky, for the last word about the Republican field. Trump still ahead, Kasich's on the bottom, but many people say that, he has the qualities that would make for a good, president or executive, but sometimes they're the people that never have a real chance.
Well, it doesn't surprise me one bit that after 8 years of Republicans appealing to the lowest common denominator voter, asking Obama whether he's really American, all these Muslim rumors and everything else, opposing everything he does, not compromising, not talking about any policy, that the actual candidates who have actual experience in doing actual things, like a Scott Walker, like a Rick Perry, like, some rumors of some of the others dropping out soon, that they can't get any steam. John Kasich can't get any steam, and the people who are leading the party are Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, folks who talk, but have zero accomplishments at all. It doesn't surprise me that that's the cream that kind of rose to the top after a party that really lost all of its ideas, put them aside at least for Obama's presidency, and said, we're just going to rhetorically attack this guy every single day. That's what they get. And frankly, if I were a Republican, I would be embarrassed that the person who's leading my party is Donald Trump with some of the crazy things he says, or Ben Carson, some of the crazy things he says every single day, or Carly Fiorina, who openly lies about things every chance she gets. I mean, it's absolutely insane that this is what the great Republican Party has come down to, Donald Trump. And it's all their fault, and it's because they've spent the last years of the Obama presidency just appealing to the crazy. It's what they get.
Well, appealing to the crazy, we shall see. Certainly, there's a lot of time between now and the primaries, and we'll see what shakes out ultimately. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Igor Volsky. He's contributing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress. And John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Gentlemen, thanks so much, as always, for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Marty Curcius, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.